Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today I'm going to talk about a few different topics, one of which is just a little jot down memory lane. It's amazing how people just either can't remember what happened not too long ago, or they never cared in the first place. I'm going to talk a bit about Edward Snowden's revelations, and Edward Snowden was not a limited hangout. The kind of nonsense you hear from people who talk about Edward Snowden as if they know what they're talking about. He did all of us a great service by revealing the depth and the scale of the NSA, GCHQ, Five Eyes, so to speak, surveillance. Many of us who are familiar with the NSA, going way back, we had an idea of how pervasive this electronic eavesdropping empire was/is. Thanks to Snowden, we have a lot more details, and we know the names of some of the programs, or at least what the names of the programs were back in the day. At least at the time when Snowden was releasing this information. Once again, the NSA is the National Security Agency, and they encrypt communications and they decrypt communications. They encipher and decipher, and increasingly over time, they began to amass gigantic amounts of information, and I'll talk a bit more about that. This is real NSA stuff, not this silly, me mom brought home NSA documents about flying saucers. You just hear ridiculous things in the UFO field, things that don't hold any water at all, that would make anyone who has any familiarity with operational security, with the concept of need to know, compartmentalization, the nature of the British-U.S. special relationship as far as the intelligence community is concerned. Anyone who knows anything about that, anything about the British spy scandals and the Soviet spies in that had really infiltrated the British segment of the Manhattan Project, etc., etc., anyone would know that these notions of British nationals walking around or bringing home NSA documents about flying saucers in the 60s or the 50s is perfectly fantastic. And the only way people would get away with saying such nonsense is because of the general ignorance, quite frankly, of a lot of people these days in the UFO field, in the metaphysical field. The internet has its pluses, it has its minuses. Unfortunately, the internet and the World Wide Web has made people, some people, I'm not speaking in absolutes here, I'm not making a simplistic generalization, but I must say that it has made a lot of people very lazy. Many people are not inclined to read books anyway, and the internet has made things worse in that regard. I mean, why read a book when you can just do a few Google searches and come up with the information or disinformation, as it were, rather than read a book cover to cover, right? That seems to be the prevailing attitude these days. And so, unlike how things were back in the day, when you would come across people, average person, at a UFO conference, and they would be quite knowledgeable about what the NSA was all about, quite knowledgeable about how secrets were kept, compartmentalization. They would be quite knowledgeable about the key milestones in UFO history. You mentioned Cash Landrum, they would know what you're talking about. You mentioned the Lonnie Zamora case, they would know what you're talking about. You mentioned the Herbert Shermer case, they would know what you're talking about. Not anymore. That's all out the window now, and people can just pop up and make up these stupid stories, and people nod their head dumbly and just go along with it. Okay, now the reason I'm bringing up NSA issues is because once again the US government and its erstwhile allies are blowing smoke about the Russians have hacked, the Russians have done this, Russian cyber attacks, etc., etc. Just the other day in Australia, the computer systems for all the Woolworths grocery stores, supermarkets, they all went down simultaneously. And the shoppers were told to leave their shopping trolleys where they were and to file out of the stores. And when people wanted to pay with cash, they said, oh, no, we can't do that, right? So everyone had to leave, and then when the story was broken in the media, then the very next story right after it was, oh, about the Russians hacking and doing all this other stuff, implying that the problem with the computer programs and systems, which effectively shut down Woolworth's supermarkets, was due to Russian hacking, Russian spying, Russian subterfuge, etc., etc. I think that things have come home to roost for Putin. I think he now regrets the fact that immediately after 9/11 he called up George W. Bush and was supportive of him. I think that if he had it to do all over again, he would have called Bush right after 9/11 and said, listen, dickweed, I know you guys are behind this. Don't try to push your bully boy agendas and plunge the entire world into chaos and warfare. Ain't gonna work. I'm calling you out on your BS right now. I wish he'd done that, because now every time something happens, it's blamed on the Russians. Meanwhile, terrorism is going on in Russia. Russian planes are being brought down. Diplomats are being assassinated. You know, all kinds of stuff that's being done to the Russians. But it's the U.S. in classic victim-aggressor mode is the one that's crying foul. There were a number of programs that Edward Snowden released. And just a reminder, Edward Snowden was a systems administrator working for Booz Allen Hamilton, a contractor, works closely with NSA and the CIA. And he, you know, struck the mother lode as far as what the NSA was up to. And he released thousands and thousands of documents and slide presentations, the works. And he shared information about a number of programs. PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, PRISM was about utilizing the telecoms, all the telecom giants, basically by ordering the telecoms to share information with NSA and, you know, with taxpayer money, the telecoms were paid handsomely for this, and this allowed NSA to access virtually all the information from all these corporations, Yahoo, Google, Verizon, etc., etc. And you have projects like the UK GCHQ Tempora and its American counterpart, NSA counterpart, Upstream, where they tapped into the fiber optic cables that go through the US and go through the UK and go into other countries. And that allowed them to plug into another mother load of information. And then we have the OCEO, Offensive Cyber Effects Operations, which was part of Presidential Decision Directive 20, PDD 20, which was issued by Obama. And it's listed as top secret, no foreign. Top secret / no foreign, N-O-F-O-R-N. No foreign is a pro word, is what it's known as in the communications world. No foreign stands for not releasable to foreign nationals. And page 9 of an 18-page document reads, Offensive Cyber Effects Operations. OCEO can offer unique and unconventional capabilities to advance U.S. national objectives around the world with little or no warning. to the adversary or target, and with potential effects ranging from subtle to severely damaging. The development and sustainment of OCEO capabilities, however, may require considerable time and effort if access and tools for a specific target do not already exist. The United States government shall identify potential targets of national importance where OCEO can offer a favorable balance of effectiveness and risk as compared with other instruments of national power, establish and maintain OCEO capabilities integrated as appropriate with other U.S. offensive capabilities, and execute those capabilities in a manner consistent with the provisions of this directive. And what that means in plain English is these are cyber attacks upon foreign governments, upon corporations, upon private citizens, you name it, with a particular emphasis on infrastructure systems in corporations, and accessing as much information from these corporations and foreign governments as possible. And whenever there was a big summit, a G20 summit, one of these big powwows with these various heads of state from the European countries and other places, NSA and GCHQ would target a lot of the foreign heads of state and their entourages and steal all this information. And what's going on now? The U.S. is bitching and moaning about the Russians hacking this, hacking that, stealing. And what's 2018 now? Snowden, at tremendous risk to himself, in, what was it, 2012, released this. All this information, offensive cyber effects operations, part of Presidential Decision Directive 20. Okay, I will now read from a book called The Snowden Files, The Inside Story of the World's Most Wanted Man by Luke Harding. And where is it? Page 139. The Snowden revelations were becoming a deluge. On Friday morning, The Guardian published an 18-page presidential policy directive, the aforementioned PDD 20, dated October 2012. The document Snowden had revealed to Poitras. It showed that Obama had ordered officials to draw up a list of potential overseas targets for offensive U.S. cyber attacks. Like other top secret programs, the policy had its own acronym, OCEO, or Offensive Cyber Effects Operations. The directive promised, quote, unique and unconventional capabilities to advance U.S. national objectives around the world with little or no warning to the adversary or target. They call them adversaries and targets. The potential effects, it boasted, ranged from subtle to severely damaging, unquote. The story was a double embarrassment for the White House. First, the U.S. had complained persistently about invasive and damaging cyber attacks from Beijing directed against American military infrastructure, the Pentagon, and other targets. These complaints now look distinctly hypocritical. The U.S. was doing exactly the same. Second, and more piquantly, Obama was due later that day to meet his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping at a summit in California. Beijing had already hit back at U.S. criticism. Senior officials claimed to have, quote, mountains of evidence of U.S. cyber attacks, every bit as serious as the ones allegedly carried out by rampant Chinese hackers. As the day unfolded, it became clear that the leaks had got the president's attention. The NSA programs helped defend America against terrorist attacks, Obama said. He added that it was impossible to have 100% security and 100% privacy. We have struck the right balance. Yeah, right. So, for the lamestream media that keeps bitching and moaning about Russian hacking and this and that and Russian cyber attacks, STFU already. Snowden came out with proof back in 2012 that that's exactly what the U.S. does to everybody else. And now, classic victim-aggressor mode, the U.S. is complaining about the Russians. Again, it's always the Russians. And since I'm on the topic about the Russians, let me talk about the distinct possibility that there was coordination between Moscow and the Pentagon to limit the damage, so to speak, to deconflict the impending missile strikes from the U.S., work things out in classic, I don't even know if you can call it a back channel, fashion, to ensure that there would be no Russian casualties and, as far as possible, no Syrian military casualties and Iranian casualties. The Israelis continue to launch strikes against Iranian positions in Syria, but that's another story. It's connected in the same story, to be sure, but we're going to be talking about, in this instance, the Pentagon's collaboration with Moscow. Now, I should point out, this does not prove, quote-unquote, that Putin is, quote-unquote, in on it. I don't feel that is the case. The Russians have a long memory. They know that, I mean, the estimates for how many were killed after the Bolshevik takeover, Russians' casualties up to 70 million or more. I would think there would probably be more than that. Toss in all the Ukrainians killed, toss in all the people throughout the length and breadth of what became the USSR, the City of London, Wall Street, Brown Brothers Harriman, all those financial networks made it possible for the Bolshevik Revolution to come into being, and we saw the baneful results after that, after the formation of the USSR. And so there is no love lost between all true Russians and the tribalist collectivists who made that mass starvation through collectivization in the Ukraine, a mass murder in Russia proper and elsewhere, okay? So you keep hearing this notion that, oh, you know, Putin is in on it and all this other stuff, and I don't buy that because it does not reflect an adequate understanding of history. Here is an article in one of my favorite websites, UNZ.com, UNZ.com, Uniform November Zulu.com. And it's written by Mike Whitney. And the article is Trump's Missile Fiasco. Did the Pentagon collaborate with Moscow on which targets to hit? The April 14th missile attacks on Syria were a politically motivated fireworks display that were largely designed to silence Trump's critics. And remember, Trump is having all this pressure put on him by his masters, Stormy Daniels, the porn star, and then his attorney's office is getting raided. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. They're just constantly hammering Trump because psychologically they want to break him down and make it so, you know, in order to man up and be a tough guy, he could do something like go along with all this warfare. And also, maybe it would benefit his masters if he did have a an emotional meltdown, nervous breakdown, because then I guess it would be even easier to control him. Okay, back to the article. The April 14th missile attacks on Syria were a politically motivated fireworks display that were largely designed to silence Trump's critics. The attacks, which were coordinated with Moscow, did not kill any Russian, Syrian, Iranian, or Hezbollah combat troops. They did not kill any Syrian civilians. They did not impede the Syrian army's ongoing military offensive or roll back any of the recent territorial gains in East Ghouta. They did not destroy any critical infrastructure, nor did they undermine the determination of the Russian-led coalition to continue to prosecute the seven-year-long war against CIA-backed terrorists who are responsible for the deaths of 500,000 Syrians and the displacement of 7 million others. In short, the attacks accomplished nothing except, perhaps, to temporarily mollify the warmongering Western media and their bloodthirsty puppet masters in the foreign policy establishment. And let me get down to the heart of the article. And there are other articles that delve into this as well. The information from a Pentagon probe into the effectiveness of the missile strikes, the top brass is apparently concerned about reports from Moscow that Russian air defenses intercepted 71 of the 103 missiles fired. And, you know, this is a side note, a real problem as far as that is concerned, that is that the Syrian air defense systems are relatively obsolete compared to the latest air defense systems the Russians possess. They were actually utilizing older Russian air defense systems, and they still managed to intercept, apparently, 71 of the 103 missiles fired when the U.S. has problems shooting down even one missile. And I would go so far as to say that the recent pandemonium in Hawaii about, oh, everyone's getting text messages advising them that a nuclear missile strike is underway. I think the whole purpose behind that is to put out these stories after the fact saying, well, you know, there really was a nuclear missile headed to Hawaii, but it was shot down by the U.S. I think that is the spin, because they had to reassure at least some people, at the very least people in the military, at these military bases, that there is a viable anti-missile defense system that can be utilized against incoming missiles. I don't believe the U.S. has a viable anti-missile system. And they're not going to, as far as I know, or anyone really knows, utilize alien technology, which, you know, the corporations have and deep black elements of the military have. No, if you're just talking about surface-level terrestrial anti-missile missile defenses, the U.S. is sorely lacking. And I've talked about this in other podcasts. The ship-based and the land-based Aegis missile systems, they just don't cut the rug. So I think that was the purpose behind the whole Hawaiian pandemonium meltdown, everyone getting text messages saying, oh, you know what, you're toast, you're going to get nuked at any moment. I think that part of that whole fiasco was to later on start leaking out stories that there really was a missile strike, but it was shot down by the Americans. I don't believe that for one second. Now, fast forward to the present time, and it seems that the Syrian army, even utilizing older Russian air defense systems, were still able to knock down 71 of the 103 missiles fired. This is deeply, deeply embarrassing to the huge aerospace giants, aerospace weapons manufacturers like Lockheed and others that are in the business, that's the key word, in the business of making an effective anti-missile defense system. Anyway, back to the article. Here's a clip from an article at South Front, and by the way, South Front is a very good website about military intelligence issues, current events, etc., etc. Informed sources close to the Pentagon say that the U.S. military is about to launch an internal probe in order to get a true picture of the situation. A real number of missiles which had hit their targets, the reasons behind a minor damage delivered by the strike, and the explanations of how the Syrian Air Defense Forces had been able to intercept a part of the missiles using their old-fashioned air defense systems. And the article on South Front is called "Pentagon is Concerned About Results of Syria Strike Prepares to Launch Internal Probe." And the article on UNS.com goes on to say, more disturbing is the news that the Pentagon coordinated with Moscow on the sites that would be targeted in the attack, which would explain why there were no casualties. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Joseph Dunford has denied the charge, but there are numerous claims circulating on the internet that sound credible. Check out this excerpt from an article at The Hill. Quote, the United States used its deconfliction phone line with Russia prior to Friday's airstrikes in Syria, but did not tell the Russians what the United States was targeting, the U.S. military's top general said Friday night. Quote, we specifically identified these targets to mitigate the risk of Russian forces being involved, and we used our normal deconfliction channels, Those were active this week to work through the airspace issues and so forth, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Joseph Dunford said at a Pentagon briefing. We did not do any coordination with the Russians on the strikes, nor did we pre-notify them. See, that's contradictory, because how could you, like, utilize your normal deconfliction channels and then right after that say, we did not do any coordination with the Russians on the strikes, nor did we pre-notify them? Well, why call them up in the first place, right? Article goes on to say, the only communications that took place specifically associated with this operation before the targets were struck was the normal deconfliction of the airspace, the procedures that are in place for all of our operations in Syria. We did not coordinate targets or any planning with the Russians, end quote. Article goes on to say, really, question mark, the Russians were not pre-notified, question mark, then how does one explain this tidbit from RT? Quote, before we took the action, the United States communicated with the Russian Federation to reduce the danger of any Russian or civilian casualties, said U.S. Ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, said, claiming that, quote, all the targets were linked with the Assad regime's illegal chemical weapons program, unquote, which no longer exists because, you know, a lot of you know, back in 2014 sometime, Assad agreed to get rid of his chemical weapons arsenal. The U.S. ambassador to Russia said that the U.S. strikes were coordinated with Russia to avoid a greater power confrontation, unquote. That's from RT. Military analyst Publius Tacitus, I like that name, is even more explicit in a post at Colonel Pat Lang's website, Sic Semper Tyrannis. He says, quote, Russia was told where we were going to strike. Russia in turn warned the Syrians. Both the Syrians and the Russians evacuated key personnel and equipment from the target sites. Any claim by the United States that we caused devastating damage or destroyed essential capabilities is total fantasy. And that article is called Trump's Big Flop in Syria, written by Publius Tacitus, Sic Semper Tyrannis. There were also a number of comments on Twitter from usually reliable sources that Russia was informed ahead of time. So, well, first of all, about if it's the same kind of deconfliction phone line that I'm thinking of, the mother of all deconfliction phone lines was the hotline between originally set up by Nikita Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy. And interestingly enough, according to some of the so-called Majestic documents, I have no reason to doubt them, the reason the hotline between the U.S. and the USSR at the time, the reason it was set up was because all these UFOs kept showing up all over the place, and there was a lot of consideration on both the parts of the U.S. and USSR that if there was a sudden mass flyover of UFOs, it may inadvertently trigger a nuclear strike on one side or the other. In fact, if you go back to the classic 1962 movie, Fail Safe, Fail Space Safe, starring Henry Fonda as the President of the United States, Larry Hagman as his Russian translator. It was about, spoiler alert, don't want to give it away. It was about, and it actually was about AI long before people started talking about AI, because the system that Strategic Air Command was utilizing to notify their bomber squadrons, nuclear bomber squadrons, of, you know, the go signal, whether to go or fly up to a failsafe place and hold, basically. Well, a glitch happened, and the system, the computer system, sent a go signal to the bomber strike wing of Vindicator bombers, and then they went off into Soviet territory to nuke Moscow. And that whole thing came about because of a UFO. You have to watch the movie. It's a classic, okay? And the UFO turned out not to be a UFO. Turned out to be an off-course airliner, but it triggered a series of alerts. One thing led to another. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but if you want to watch a movie that is literally a white-knuckle kind of hair-raising type movie, watch Failsafe, and you get an idea of just how easy it is for these things to kind of go pear-shaped and lead to a nuclear war or at least a nuclear exchange. I highly recommend that movie, especially all the talk these days about AI and stuff. Well, this movie anticipated all that about what happens if machines and computers take over in real time and pit the nuclear forces of one country against the other. Getting back to this thing in Syria, again, I want to stress, I don't think this is an example of Putin working behind the scenes to create all this fear porn, war porn. I don't think that's the case. I believe that somewhere along the line, cooler heads prevailed. Let's see how long General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, keeps his job. Likewise, let's see how long it takes for this. I'm just guessing here, it may not happen, but let's see if they replace the U.S. ambassador to Russia also for the things that he said. It could be an example where a decision was made at some level, certainly at the level of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking U.S. military official, to deconflict. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and do this launch. Just make sure you get your Russians out of there and, get the Assyrians out of there, get the Iranians out of there. We're just going to basically attack empty bases. We're just going to attack discarded sites, airfields, whatever the case may be, right? But that may not happen a second time. The Russians have already made it clear that if Russian personnel are killed in Syria, they will retaliate, they will attack the source of the strikes, whether it's U.S. naval vessels, whether it's a land-based installation, whether it's aircraft, whatever the case may be. And the person who said this was no less than the highest-ranking member of the Russian military, General Valery Gerasimov, chief of the Russian General Staff, right? So, in our example, if a U.S. guided missile destroyer in the Eastern Med launches a missile strike and a single Russian is killed, right? Well, the Russians are going to go after that guided missile destroyer, and they're going to hammer it with their standoff weapons capability, also known as over-the-horizon weapons capability. There will be missiles sent from far away that will just hammer that warship, and there's not a whole lot they can do about it. So I think that deconfliction was the order of the day, that Trump, in a moment of weakness, being pressured from all sides, the manipulators around him pulling, jerking his strings, and he went ahead and gave the order, but cooler heads in the system prevented things from completely unraveling, and I'm glad about that. So let's see how this plays out. Hopefully this is just a one-off. I wouldn't put money on that. As we speak, a carrier battle group, the Harry S. Truman carrier battle group, is heading out to the Eastern Med. That's not very good, because if they decide to do something to escalate this war, chances are the sailors and the Marines that are on those naval vessels are going to be the ones that bear the brunt. Always remember that the powers that be want this war to happen at some level. There are factions that seriously want this war to take place. The Israelis want the U.S. military to do their fighting for them again. And they have to do everything possible, these people within the system, to stop that from happening, because things can quickly unravel. Again, I just spoke moments ago about back in 1962, that movie Failsafe postulated a possible thermonuclear confrontation between the U.S. and the USSR, all because of, you know, computers making decisions on their own, because of false go signals being sent or incorrect go signals. So let's keep all that in mind. At any time, this can go pear-shaped, so let's hope it doesn't happen. Another thing about the standoff weapons capability of the Russians, it's been proven. They've hammered the ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever you want to call these crazed jihadis. They've hammered their positions in Syria with pinpoint accuracy from thousands of kilometers away. We know they can do this now. This is not theoretical, whereas a lot of talk about the Americans and their super weapon systems, right now it's all theoretical. And the ones blowing that smoke tend to be people that are favorable to the concept of all these wars and always have a bias towards favoring U.S. weapon systems, vice weapon systems of other countries, be they Russia, China, whatever the case may be. Bottom line is, the Russians have already proven in combat that they can deal death from a distance with their long-range strike capability. It is not theoretical. They can do this. Now what I want to talk about before the end of this first segment, and we're going to have a members segment where I'm going to talk about the upcoming DIAFM interview, which I am particularly proud of, one of the most important interviews I've ever had, and one of the most important guests I've ever had, because her MyLab interdimensional op experiences are more like what I hear from people that I consider to be legitimate. And the powers that be don't want us to know that at least some people have this capability. Capabilities that put anything you see in the X-Men or the Avengers to shame. Because of the DNA profile of these people, because of their morphic resonance field and their innate know-how, and the taskings they're receiving from their own oversoul and whoever else they may be affiliated with, they've already done a signal service helping to unravel this whole control system. What I'm going to talk about now is the concept of respect, of mutual respect. Back in the day, I didn't always agree with other people's perspectives, but we always kept it cordial. I didn't always agree with what Barbara Bartholik said. I didn't always agree with what Candy Turner said. I didn't always agree with what Evie Lorgan said. And likewise, they didn't always agree with what I said or believed. But we respected each other. We kept cordial. We respected what each one of us brought to the table. We respected the knowledge base and the know-how, the skill sets that we brought to the table. We looked for topics with which we agreed with instead of looking for things to divide us. And we kept it at a mutually respectful level, which you don't see nowadays, right? So, you know, if they ask my opinion about anything, I would give them my opinion. And sometimes I give them an earful, and it was up to them to accept it or not. And it was fine with me either way. And likewise, if they told me something which I didn't quite agree with, or I believe part of it, it was up to me to make that determination, whether I took some or all of it or none of it on board. But still, to keep things at a cordial level, okay? Respect. You always see this in the mafia movies. Respect. It's about the level of respect, right? But in our field, what we do, it's important to have that mutual understanding, mutual level of respect with the people that are really part of your peer group. I'm not talking about the ones who basically are wannabes, want to crash the party and act like they know everything and act like they're players in the field, which they're not, okay? Because the real players will see right through them instantly.
I want to talk about a particular type of programming that the aliens and their minions, their hybrid minions, have been doing. One thing I've noticed, and one thing that my colleagues and I have noticed, is that these entities, they're dogmatic in the extreme. And there's a number of different scenarios which we can describe, but in general, it goes like this. You go to sleep, and then you find yourself in some astral dreamscape scenario. And these ETs, oftentimes they're behind the scenes, but sometimes they're there, and they think that they can use their mind control, use their astral dreamscape manipulation techniques to project images in their place to make it seem as if they're not there. And then what they do is they put you through a scenario, and you buy into the scenario in a virtual environment with the intention, I believe, that you wake up, and it's very subtle, but they've changed your thinking on certain things. They've changed your beliefs on certain things. They've changed your thinking and beliefs at a subconscious level. Now, the thing is, and this happened with myself, this happened with friends of mine, when we catch them in the act, nope, ain't falling for this. Sometimes ETs will pop out and they'll make you go through the whole thing again. They'll make you go through the whole scenario again, just start from the beginning. And then when you catch them again, nope, ain't falling for it. This is BS. And then sometimes ETs will get mad and they'll put you through the scenario again. Now, I've known people who have busted the ETs in the act of putting them through these simulations, and then they say, nope, ain't falling for it. You know, this is fake, this is fake, this is fake. I've even known of cases where my lab, interdimensional operator buddies of mine, have actually changed the scenarios of these things, where they would have, like, you know, an aggressor team, a team on defense, and then there's supposed to be a scenario where one side attacks the other, but my friends would, like, catch them in the act, wake up some of the other people that were part of this scenario that were likewise being programmed, likewise being manipulated, and say, no, 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 we're not going to do it their way, we're going to do it this way. And then they get everyone else to go along with them and radically change the scenario, change the outcome of the scenario, in a way that's totally not favorable to these beings and the agenda they're pushing. And sometimes they will use their hybrid minions that are here on the surface, blowing smoke. I call them disempowerment agents, not just disinformation agents, but disempowerment agents, because if you listen, and you don't even have to really listen closely to their message, but you know, if you just take the time and just like bite your tongue and just tell yourself, okay, they'll stop talking eventually, right? You know, because some of these people, it's like a TV infomercial, just how often and how long they go on. But some of these types are utilized by their Draco reptilian ET masters in these scenarios. And on one occasion, one of these disempowerment agent types was in my dreamscape. And he was there at the behest of his alien Draco reptilian masters, and they were putting me through these scenarios, these virtual reality scenarios. And they expected me to just go along with them. I guess they thought of me as like a Chinese coolie, you know. Yes, boss. And, you know, just kiss up to him. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Whatever you say, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. You know, throw me a few grains of rice, boss. Yes, boss. But I didn't go along with it. I'd stop everything in its tracks and say, this is BS, this is BS, this is BS. And in this instance, instead of like an ET coming to you and, you know, coming to me and then like touching my forehead or my third eye or something, you know, to try to trance me out and then put me back, you know, to the beginning of the scenario, rewinding essentially, right? This time, instead of one of the ETs doing this, it was this disempowerment agent. No, 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 James, you got to start over. You didn't do it right. You dysfunctional, spiritually unevolved retard, you. You didn't do it right. Start over. Okay, so I play along. And then I go through the scenario, then at a certain point I go, nope, this is all BS. This is fake, this is fake, this is fake. And I kept doing this, and then this disempowerment agent, he lost that cool, calm exterior and the jovial nature he expresses here on the surface, right? He blew his top, got in my grill, and started yelling and screaming at me. Just demanding that I go along with the program. Me, I just laughed. Right? Clyde Drexler, a great Hall of Fame basketball player, he tells a story that when he was a rookie, he was playing against the Boston Celtics and Larry Bird for the very first time, and Bird was the all-time trash talker. He really was. This white guy with a southern accent, actually French Lake, Indiana. And Bird kept telling him, "You can't stop me, rookie. I'm going to drop 40 tonight on you, rookie. You can't stop me." And then Drexler would go, wow, you're so confident. You're so full of yourself. And Bird would go, "Rookie, you don't even know what's going on. You don't know anything, right?" And Bird went on to score like 10 straight points on Drexler. And then the coach took Drexler out. And as Drexler was slinking off towards the sideline to courtside, Bird walked by and went, laughed at him, right? Clyde Drexler tells a story. And that's what I did when this disempowerment agent was yelling at me, getting in my grill, right? "You're not doing it right. You're not doing it right." And he lost his composure. He lost his cool. Me? And I'll tell you why I laughed. Because it was amateur hour. Like, who does this guy think he is? Who do these beings think they are? Who do they think they're dealing with? And folks, some of you have far more metaphysical astral capabilities than I do. And I don't mean this in a boastful sense, but some of you need to develop a certain mindset that, hey, you come into my astral dreamscape, you come into my mind, okay, you're in my hood, and you're going to play by my rules, right? And don't let anyone big shot you. Don't let anyone talk down to you. I just laugh. You think you can manipulate me? I guess they thought I'd wake up and just start sounding like some Muppet the next day. This is James Bartley and the Cosmic Switchboard Show, and today we're going to talk about things to disempower you, but I'm not going to coach it in such terms. Om, right? I guess that's what they thought. Well, it didn't work. And so, you know, the point of relevance is you are the masters of your domain. Conscious, subconscious, astral, dreamscape environment, virtual environment, none of it matters. You are still in charge. You are the master and commander. And when these entities come into your astral dreamscape, create a virtual environment and try to get you to play along with it, do what I did, just laugh at them. Or do what some of my friends did, change this whole scenario around, frustrate the hell out of them, right? And now, we'll bring this segment to an end. I'm going to talk about in the members only section the upcoming parts of the upcoming interview with Diaphim. I'm going to talk about it from the standpoint of what I've heard from others who've told me similar stories. The difference is that Diaphim agreed to be interviewed. She retains an astonishing amount of conscious memory. No matter what dimensional state she's in, no matter what vibratory state she's in, she's pulled off Haas's rescues, rescued people, whether it's from this dimension, this reality, or another. The effect was the same. She rescued people from reptilians that were held captive. She's had interactions with deep black elements of the military who tried to control her, but they couldn't. Okay? So, please, if you know, I really encourage you to plug into this upcoming interview with Diaphim, because it'll be unlike any interview you've ever heard. And I must say that these are the kind of stories I've been collecting and collating, and these are the kind of people I've been networking with for a long time now. Okay? I'm not talking about this blue ostrich cult, yellow lantern, hexagonal alliance, any of that nonsense. All that stuff is dumbed down to the level of a B-grade Netflix movie. But the reality is, we are multidimensional beings. The powers that be, the controllers, the Draco Empire, don't want us to know this. And when you hear Diaphim talking very matter-of-factly of her experiences and what her capabilities are, you will know why they don't want us to know about this or talk about this. Because it undermines their whole agenda, undermines their whole control system. If we woke up, and I'm not talking about the whole planet, all these overly fluoridated, you know, messed up people that just believe everything the TV people tell them. They're not a part of this, okay? This information is not meant for them. They've made their own choices. They've allowed other beings to make choices for them. They're not part of this discussion, folks. It was never my intention to lead this gigantic breakout of billions of people. And like I said before, it's like, you know, what have they done to earn it? What have they done to earn the right to break out of this prison matrix and this recycling system when they're a part of it themselves? They're a bunch of Will Smiths. They're a bunch of Matrix Sentinels, as I call them, right? You know, I'd rather run with one than be dragged down by 20, okay? So anyhow, we've reached the end of the first segment. You've been listening to Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. And if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the start of the member section. Bye for now.